Hello, and welcome to Blood, Sweat, and Careers, the podcast where we discuss multi-hyphenates, dig deep into hustle culture, and find hobbies until bars are a thing again. We're your hosts, Austin and Mallory. Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
Welcome back.
We're here again.
We're here. I'm Austin Mark, Olympic gymnast and employee of the week.
This is Mallory Kaufman, couch comedian and cat warden.
There you go.
Okay, did you see, you didn't even see what I sent you, or maybe you just didn't care, but it's Paris, a whole interview with Kate Hudson and Paris Hilton.
Yes, I did. I meant to respond.
I don't understand. These are, it's Paris and Kate Hudson.
And Nikki. And,
Oliver.
And the other, and Oliver.
Yeah. I've been listening to it. It's pretty good. Nice. Not like laugh out loud slapstick funny, but then again, it's hard to be super funny when you're talking about abusive situations. Like, they go into the documentary.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like proud of her that she's keeping up on it. Like, it's, I mean, because in today's world, it feels like when news happens, that was so 6 days ago or whatever. Like, there was a siege at the Capitol. but like, since the Paris documentary came out, like, she's been consistently talking about it.
And
it's clearly very important to her, and good for her.
No kidding. I know. And in her normal voice, too. So there's not even the affect of the, like, hey, this is Paris. It's definitely like the normal Paris voice. But apparently they're all like old friends, which is also just what's so funny. Like, I feel like as we get older and as the world keeps turning, you start to realize, like, even the story I was telling you earlier, how interwoven all of these people are. Be it Nikki and Paris or Buttigieg and Kamala. And like, you know, and I'm just like, whoa, like, these people all run in circles together.
Yeah. And someday we will too.
Yeah. The podcasting crew.
Us and
500 million other people.
Yeah. No, I was going to say like us and Terry Gross and...
I like the specific, and Samantha Bee and the My Favorite Murder Girls will just be like one happy fam.
Yeah. Just like group texting. Ugh. Well, this is, as one listener called, enough millennial brunch chat for one episode.
Oh my God. I hope we don't keep everything in. It's too much.
We'll see how the time shakes out, but. We are back this week, like every week, to talk about multi-hyphenates. And if you're just jumping in now, a multi-hyphenate is traditionally a person in Hollywood who was an actor, dancer, singer. Basically, it was a way to expand a definition of what somebody did for a living to explain that they did more than one thing and they weren't just one thing and they didn't want to be defined solely by one vocation. And now we on this podcast are expanding multi-hyphenate to include gig work and side hustles and hobbies, and bring the conversation to today, where we're really focusing around a millennial economy and these crazy times where it is really rare for us to be working a 40-year career job. Both because society has changed completely and the job market has changed completely, and because we need more fulfillment from what we do, or we need more money to live the lives that we want to live. We are weaving together a tapestry of careers and hobbies and side gigs and hustles.
Now you got me thinking Prince of Egypt. All this media in our midst tonight.
Yes.
History.
Prince of Egypt is a deep cut favorite of Mallory and mine.
Welcome to the inner circle, people. No.
Yeah. This is what we do.
Well said, Austin. I think that is
Thank
true.
You. It was kind of long. We're trying to make it shorter every week, and I think I just lengthened it by a good bit. But that's where we're at. We're multi-hyphenate people talking to multi-hyphenate people. We're talking to a multi-hyphenate this week.
Yeah. And honestly, I think your lengthy intro maybe is appropriate this week, because I feel like this is an individual who we talk to, who it almost felt like we had to pull out of them the fact that they're a multi-hyphenate. They were a little shy about the term, and even in the conversation, I think, started coming more and more around to the idea of who they are in this space. So we're talking to Miles Gordon. He's an artist in his past life, so to speak, was a hospitality expert, or he called himself, I think, a client service expert, and had worked in luxury hotels on the Vegas Strip before deciding that he wanted to make a huge career pivot and work in the cannabis industry. And that's where he's at now. So currently he's balancing his art and a career in the newly legalized cannabis industry in Vegas. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Well, let's jump right into it.
All right. Hi, Miles.
Hi, how are you?
Thanks for doing this. We're so excited to have you.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I've been looking forward to it all day.
Yay.
We're in the double digits of episodes now. So, thanks. Oh, hey, girl.
It's a big deal.
And I'm just so excited to have you on, because I feel as if not only your story will be super fascinating to discuss, but it also is just fun to be talking to someone who I've known for so long, like actually so long, and been kind of a cheerleader slash fan in the stands to what you've been up to your whole life. Miles and I met through his sister Bianca, who I've known since kindergarten. So I knew you, Miles, probably when you were like 3.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I feel like we go way back. I feel like, yeah, you. And then the funny thing is, you know my sister, and I vice versa. I'm very close with your sister. So It's very funny, the full circle of it. But I would agree, just watching you grow up and seeing how far you've come, I'm just so excited to be here.
Yeah, it's really special. It's kind of it's a neat way to have, I think, this type of conversation too. Because after our little pre-interview, was even just reflecting on how interested I am to kind of get caught up on everything, but also see this multi-hyphenate conversation through the lens of someone that I can relate to so deeply.
Yeah, absolutely.
Enough about me.
Get a room.
We got to jump into this conversation. But right now, to kind of give some context, Miles, you are currently working in the cannabis industry while also maintaining your passion for art. You've been an artist since high school, maybe even before, but especially since high school. And I feel like that's carried through a lot of your life. And you made the recent transition to the cannabis industry after, I want to say it was 7 years or 9 years in hospitality.
I feel like at this point, I would just sort of consider myself like a hospitality / customer service expert, because I've just been working forever, like in a front-facing customer service environment, whether it's like hotels, spas, ski resort. So I feel like that skill set just keeps transferring and building as I'm going. But yeah, definitely at this point, just like customer service expert / bud tender / cannabis consultant, and then artist on the side.
Is bud tender what they call it? That's an exciting...
I love it.
It's funny. I feel like it's open for interpretation. I feel like the original name was bud tending. And then as we become like more legalized and I feel like more professional across the states, I feel like it's going to start being more like cannabis consultant. So I'm kind of, I work both edges.
Well, that's super fun.
I think it is intriguing just to even know what you do, like at that job. Maybe we can start there and then leap, kind of move backwards. But what's your day-to-day look like?
Yeah. So, I mean, this year alone has been insane, because it's also on top of like doing that job, it's being considered like an essential worker in the middle of a pandemic, which even when everything happened, it was like up in the air of like, do we consider cannabis essential? Which is like kind of a classic question that we've now struggled with as a society. And it came out, yes.
I'm sure there are tons of people who do find it to be essential.
Right? Like it's, and we found that it's incredibly essential to sort of helping maintain, I feel like, the peace right now.
Right.
Healthily more essential than the liquor stores, which I remember the pandemic started. Oh my God, are they going to shut the liquor stores down? What will I do?
How will we cope?
And seriously, when I mean, when that, when it first came up and they were sort of shutting things down, there were a lot of people, especially here, who were really bothered by the idea of liquor stores being essential. But you do have to remember that, like, if there are tens of thousands of people who are dependent on alcohol who then have to go into withdrawal and are taking up all of the hospital beds, then it does leave less room for people who are dying from the pandemic. So wow, there is thought behind that.
Not where my brain went, but thank you for educating me.
But also, it's essential just to like keep my mood stable.
Absolutely.
Through my glass of wine is where I was at, but thank you.
So I feel like with what I do from the day to day, currently my focus is literally just on selling cannabis. And that's definitely like one of the biggest points that is right now where I'm at, because the dispensary I work in is the world's largest dispensary. So I found with those larger operations, it's definitely a single-minded focus, which is they want you to be taking care of customers and pushing product and selling. When I was working at a smaller dispensary, the nice thing is working there, I was able to do a little bit of everything. I was doing inventory, stocking, metric, reception, delivery, pickup, online ordering. So really everything under the sun. And so it was nice being able to transfer all those skills. But right now, my focus is primarily on just like cannabis consultations, which is literally just discussing with people how I can get them medicated or whatever they're looking for.
That's super fascinating. And you express that you're doing really well at it, that you're enjoying it quite a lot.
I feel like it's really cool to be with a company where they just expect you to like succeed and basically give you the space to blossom. And I wasn't sure how it would be, especially having only worked in one other dispensary. But again, this one is very much just encouraging. Like, as long as you're doing your job correctly, as long as you're following compliance of what the government expects, as long as customers are leaving happy, then we just want you to be selling cannabis and there for the experience.
And I feel like the reason it's exciting too is maybe a good jumping off point is, as we expressed, you've been working in the hospitality space for a really long time, or sounds like you also think of it as client, you specializing in client services as well, but you more specifically had been doing hospitality. And so I'm interested to know, kind of looking backwards, when you first got started, what did you think you were going to be when you grew up?
Oh my gosh. It's funny because I feel like from the moment I was like, what am I going to be when I grow up? I feel like being really young and drawn to Las Vegas, just because it's so close to Colorado and there was so much excitement that was incomprehensible or inaccessible from where we were at in the mountains. So just going to Las Vegas, right? Going to Las Vegas, I was always like attracted to it. So I feel like for forever, it was just implanted that I would be like doing something in the casino industry or in the hotel industry, because I was obsessed with Las Vegas from like a very young age. That said, I feel like come as that age of like ripe age of 18, where you have to start making those decisions of what you're actually going to start pursuing. I remember basically bouncing between whether or not I would go to art school or whether or not I would go to hotel school, basically. And I just had to deal with that battle of like, do I want to be potentially a starving artist, like constantly fighting for an income, with a lot of like uncertainties, or do I want to try to establish like a more set career path? And ultimately I went the more set career path because I figured you can always do art on the side. And that sort of idea of like, do you have to be taught art? Do you have to be trained art? Or is it like naturally you're allowed to produce what you want and put it out there? So I always figured I could focus on the more corporate path and then still produce art on the side. So I've actually been doing what I always thought I would be doing.
That's pretty impressive though.
Right?
Yeah, that worked out nicely.
Up until you switched.
Yeah. So, well, and that's the thing. I feel like I always thought that would be the best part about switching, would be that I have such an in-depth hospitality background and that hopefully I would be able to take that and apply it to the cannabis industry, because it really is going to be so much about customer service interactions, or as you get more in depth with the cannabis industry, it can be all about account-based management and people management and maintaining those relationships, which is something I've learned just in the brief period I've been in the industry.
And so I just kind of wanted to go back for a minute and talk a little bit about, so you graduated from hotel school, you got a job and moved up with a famous casino on the strip that people would recognize, but we're not going to name specifically. And you were doing well in the hotel casino business, but it ended up not being the thing for you. Can you just tell us a little bit more about what made that change for you?
Yeah. So like I said, I feel like I was always sort of on this path of thinking I was going to be in hotel management and just customer service in general. And so it was kind of like when I came from Vail to Las Vegas, that was a huge jump because working on the strip is a huge network. And it's all about who you know in combination with your experience. But being an outsider to Las Vegas, I didn't have those relationships of like, hey, I might have gone to school with this parent's kid who may do this at this hotel. So I really had to start from the bottom and really in a most random place was able to get my foot in the spa industry on the strip.
Wow.
And I spent time there developing. And it's funny because again, as you go into that path, then people are like, oh, are you going to go into spa management or you trying to move up and like be the general manager of the spa? And I even had to turn my back on that and take a huge leap of faith and was like, I don't want to do spa management. I don't feel like there's enough that interests me with that. And I'm actually going to take a huge jump. And that's when I went and took my internship at Disney World. So it wasn't until I actually did a hospitality internship with Disney World in Florida that I was like truly dived into like front desk, hotel management, and everything that comes with the experience of a guest checking in and checking out. Luckily, I was told like, hey, you're going to have to start here when you make your way back to Las Vegas. And you might have to start at Circus because no one will ever take you up like a nice hotel. Fortunately, when I came back from, yeah, I had some pretty honest conversations and was, and hey, it really does work like that with the strip is that you have these tiers of luxury, economical brands, and they really look at your experiences like, have you worked at an economical brand? Well, then you need to start there, move your way up. Well, fortunately, when I came back, I was hired by a very luxurious new property and was able to just get my foot right there and start front desk. And I did front desk, concierge, front desk management, group reservations, which is like
wow,
the whole event planning side and organizing the housing side of events. And then eventually my last stop was hotel sales. And that's actually selling room blocks to corporations. So I've worked with tons of corporations from like Snapchat to T-Mobile to Pandora, Spotify, tons of huge corporations and planning their events in Las Vegas. And so I've tried to touch on a lot of the hotel industry when I was in there at the time.
And ultimately, what made you decide to leave?
So that ultimately came from me kind of, I was always told to try to take as many opportunities as you can. I was taught that in school and from the people that I was mentored in the hotel industry is that when opportunities present themselves, just be that person that raises your hand and willing to sort of help and jump in. And so that was my mentality when I started working front desk was like, I'm going to take as many opportunities as I can. I'm going to try to get as much one-on-one time to develop and see where I can go. And that's great when you don't have an experience and that was the best way to learn. But ultimately, once I started to get to like my fifth, sixth opportunity, I started to realize what I don't want and what I don't want to give up working in the hotel industry. And I saw from working in the hotel industry, it's incredibly demanding on the hours and the time you work because it's a 24/7 operation that they ultimately say when they open up, they never close.
Right.
So for me, it was like just spending so much time in the hotel industry and especially in a very fast-paced, huge part of it, which is Las Vegas, I started to see what I wanted in life down in the big picture and how limiting that can be when you work in the hotel industry. Cannabis has always been a passion of mine, especially coming from Colorado. I feel like that's in the blood roots.
The birthright, really.
Right. So I feel like that was always on like the back of my mind and I was always expecting Las Vegas to legalize just because from what I've learned, Las Vegas will pretty much try anything if they can make money off of it. and so that we legalized cannabis real quick. And so as soon as that happened, it was always in the back of my mind that I kind of felt like I wanted to make the transition. But it wasn't until I sort of hit that, what I feel like was my glass ceiling of like, I can either give up so many things and keep moving up in this company, mm-hmm. or I can make a big change now and realize like, I basically came to the point where I realized like I didn't want to keep moving up and there wasn't really any opportunity that I felt like would make me happy there. And so I just felt like it was the right time to make the change.
I feel like that's a really brave place to arrive to. And it is kind of the circumstance we discuss a lot on this podcast, just because obviously a lot of the people we're talking to have done multiple things or made many different transitions, but it doesn't cease to amaze me. Every time I feel like when I almost like physically go back to the times I've been in a position like that, where you're kind of, you know, you're making a choice and it's potentially going to be the wrong choice if there ever was, or a harder choice than what's potentially a little bit easier, just staying where you are. So I'm intrigued to know, like, did you secure a job before you hopped out of the hospitality industry? Did you kind of do a leap of faith? And can you talk a little bit about, I know you mentioned this last year being a lot, but what does that all mean? I think there's a lot in what you were implying.
Yeah, so it's fun. I would definitely say when I made the jump, that was one of the hardest decisions I've had to make, because I had come to know the comfort of a large corporation and also just a large work environment where I was highly recognized. but definitely the hardest decision, and it took a long time to come to terms with making that decision. It was definitely probably over the course of 6 months of like really thinking about what it would be like to make that change. But ultimately it came when I just got it ultimately came on New Year's, when I had been having just basically that moment of like, I don't want to be doing this the rest of my life. I'm not feeling fulfilled. I'm not feeling happy. I'm not feeling like this is what I want to be doing with my life in the long term. And I basically was like, I've already had a year of like frustration and self-doubt and feeling like I'm not where I want to be. And then of course you hit the new year. And for me, I'm always like, I need to make change if that's how I'm feeling. And I was like, I'm not having another year with all of those emotions that came with that industry and where I was in that industry. And it really was like, I'm just not having a year like that. So I'm going to make a change and start new. And I did not have anything lined up. Wow. Besides hope.
A lot of hope. A
lot of hope on that one. And it really was crazy. And I can go further into that like timeline. But I would ultimately say it wasn't until 3 months ago that I've gotten into this position that I'm starting to feel like even the dust has settled from that jump, mm-hmm. because it really has been a lot of craziness and a little bit of job hopping. But I would say reflecting and getting ready for this conversation, it's like, I finally feel like I'm where I'm supposed to be. And it's taken almost 2 years to feel that way.
Wow. Well, and something else that we talked about in our pre-interview that I think will resonate with a lot of people is, in the transition from leaving the hotel industry, you were considering kind of working for yourself and leaning into art as a career, or just generally working for yourself. And I think a lot of us have been in that position after you've left a job, whether you quit or were fired or laid off, of thinking, all right, I'll just have my own business. Can you talk a little bit about your plans for that and how that felt?
Yeah. So for me, I feel like art has always been something that I've done on the side, mostly for myself, with the hope that it would eventually take off or that it would go somewhere. But then it wasn't until I met someone in the cannabis industry who was an artist themselves, who was actually doing well in the art industry and was explaining to me the opportunities and sort of ways to go about it.
Oh, interesting.
But yet they were like attending art fairs and going to First Fridays. And so I just didn't feel like I had the knowledge or skill set of how to become an artist or what I should be doing until I met this person who then kind of inspired me and gave me a little bit of instruction. The irony, though, is that most of the tools they had given me are things that are shut down during COVID.
Right, of course.
So a lot of it was like, well, I've been going to art fairs and doing First Fridays. And these are all like large gatherings and events that are not actually super happening.
Super spreaders.
Yeah. So we would consider super spreaders these times, but not of art. So I feel like what ultimately happened was I was let go from the smaller dispensary in the middle of the pandemic, in the middle of June. And basically, ideally, my focus was to do art and for that to take off. And I'm still working on basically creating catalog for when these events do end up returning. But what it is, I mean, when I was doing that art, is there is always this overhanging feeling of like, I'm independent at this point and I'm financially responsible for myself and I don't have any sort of stream of income at this point.
Yeah.
And so that was definitely one of the most interesting feelings I've experienced and I'm learning from, because I've always had a job forever and I've always consistently jumped from opportunity to opportunity. So that was like the first time I really had nothing and didn't know what I was going to be doing. So I would use art as like a bit of a distraction and as a way to have somewhere to be putting my focus and energy.
When you had a full-time job.
When I had a full-time job, but more like I was using that as my focus of when I didn't have a job. Because when you don't have a job, you're like, what should I be doing? I'm like, well, I'm going to be doing art because that's really what I can be doing right now.
When we talked about it, you spoke about having your artist chamber drained. And so basically what it sounded like was when you had work outside of being an artist, you could turn to it, to the art, out of a responsibility to like your mental well-being or out of an interest in exploring your creative side. And when all of a sudden the art was your job, it put this stress on the art and you that maybe you are reflective of now that feels maybe less exciting than you thought it would.
100% yes, it was exactly that. It's that as soon as I became responsible for creating that stream of income, but also doing art for income, there was this tremendous amount of pressure and stress to like create and hopefully it succeed and for it to take off, which is hard because it really wasn't. And so it really did drain my artistic chamber. And at the same time, I was doing like back-to-back-to-back projects until I got the job I was able to do. Because like I said, my focus was so on just doing anything to maintain like a structure in my life.
Mm-hmm. I so relate to that. I feel like when I made the transition to owning my own agency and was my own boss, there was on the one hand, something really awesome about that. I think I do. I can be very bossy. So I know exactly how to tell myself what to do all day long. But at the same time, I felt like there was no boundary between when to stop, when to move on to a different client. And it was becoming financially irresponsible the way that it was set up for me, because I just would almost work more than I needed to or more than I could and not make enough money doing it.
Right. And that's the thing, is it was just like that, except for adding on to it, like there really was the whole financial element of the pandemic. And I really was like running out of money completely. So I was like, it was just a completely new feeling of like, don't have a job, don't have an income. I'm making art. I'm doing like semi-free projects. And at that point, I just had to transition to getting, I basically hit the point where I was like, I have to get a job at this point, like in the next month, or like, I'm not going to be able to stay afloat as a human or as what I'm doing. And then it's funny because I was very much teetering on whether or not I wanted to go back into the cannabis industry after having done that for a year and worked it through the pandemic. I'm so glad I did, because I feel like I've given the industry another chance and found somewhere that's been able to show me that I'm in the right place and help me revitalize my energy. And that's exactly what I needed. So now I feel like I am ready to now come back to my art and probably even take some of the emotions that I've had to experience the past 3 months and turn it into something even better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because you definitely described your art as, which I think would be interesting to talk about for, if you're willing for a second, is like therapy that you use. So I think initially asked you, oh, are you looking to monetize the art? And you've just explained, sure, I'm open to it. But when I tried, at least during a pandemic, that was real stressful and near impossible.
Well, and it's funny because it's like when I was doing art, I originally was trying to create and be like, what can I produce that people will receive and have a reaction to? And it wasn't until I started sort of reflecting on my emotions and reflecting on, because I used to do like really like, I'm just going to paint an apple with wings and hopefully set it on fire and that will get a reaction. Whereas then I turned to like,
where do I buy this?
Right. So I ultimately started doing more abstract art, which was weird because that was not what I was doing at all. And I noticed that when I started to like capture my emotions and try to capture a moment in my art, that's when I would get the best reaction of all. And I noticed like, I was like, that is art therapy for me. And obviously I'd heard the term and it is a real industry.
Yes.
But I validate, I mean, I appreciate it because I feel like it helped me get through hard times. Like I've had a breakup where I was so frustrated and so hurt, but at the same time having such like a Taylor Swift vibe that I was like, I'm just gonna like do like a revenge painting and let out all this emotion. And I spent like 3 months on this huge canvas that's in my house. And literally as soon as I finished the piece, I was like, I'm over it. That's done. I was able to channel all that aggression and sadness and happiness, weird spectrum of emotion onto this canvas. And now I'm able to be like, I'm glad I had that relationship. Cause even if that hadn't been like a shit show, like now I have this beautiful canvas that's 4x4 feet.
Right.
So cool.
Now all of that negative emotion is just like trapped in the canvas.
Yes. And then people come over and are like, what's that about? I'm like, oh, you don't want to know. How does it make you feel?
I had to Dorian Gray my ex because it hurt that bad.
I like that. And I feel like, Austin, you are an artist too. And it was interesting when you shared that with us, your reaction, Austin, because you are like, I approach my art almost the opposite way where I'm interested in.
Oh, yeah. No, we do. So after our call yesterday, I was telling Mallory how it's interesting that you said that you have some pieces of art that got you through a hard time or that you can look back at and you feel like I have this art that I can appreciate, even though I had to go through something to get it. And with my art, both my makeup artistry and then these like miniature things that I build, for me, the therapy is in the doing of the thing. So the process of making the small thing is where I put my emotion. And then when it's done, I'm like, get it out of my house. Like, I don't want to look at it. It doesn't interest me. And then with a lot of the images of photo shoots that I've done, if I look at them too, some, I have pieces that I really love that I worked on, but at the same time, a lot of the makeup, when I look back at it, all I can think of is like, I would have changed this, or I wish I could do it again so I could do the whole thing differently, or I wish that I had known to do something else to make it better than it was. I think I'm just like too critical of myself or something, but at any rate, it doesn't serve me anymore after the thing is done.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't even thought of that. But yeah, I mean, that is so a part of art. And also, again, like art therapy is, I mean, it's all about how I feel like we're structured and what we need to do in order to like break those moments, whether it's we need to just go through the process of having a habit and that in itself puts us at ease or helps us get through what we're working through. But it is funny because for me, I'm like, no, it's like the end goal is what I'm trying to get to. And working up to that is the work itself. Besides the fact that I'm like dancing the whole time while I'm painting.
Well, and the funny thing too, for me, is that I'm also an art collector. Like I have a lot of art in my house. So if someone else has made it, I love to be able to hang on to that emotion or that feeling. Mm-hmm. Actually, a lot of my art is like very dark and sad looking. And it was hard to figure out what to put where in our house because I didn't want our living room to be all pictures of like crying elephants. And I don't know. I have a lot of really... really depressing looking things, but it's stuff that I love that resonates with me. And I like to be able to see those things and kind of recapture the emotion of, I don't know, cause it's not my art, but I still feel very emotionally tied to all of the art that I own. I would never hang a portrait of makeup that I did. I don't think that would ever feel right to me.
which is so fascinating.
Well, and it is interesting too. I'm thinking about it as you guys are talking about the miniatures and the art and the way we hang things and just keeping things in the house. And I'm like, that is actually part of it too, of what was draining as an artist and what I'll have to figure out going into 2021 is, and I think I mentioned that briefly yesterday, but I was like, part of that is my house, is like my house is overstuffed with like pieces of art that are mine. And some kind of like you said that I'm like, I don't even want to like reflect on this and see this, 'cause I almost want someone else to experience it. So I think that will be part of my challenge as a developing artist now, is like mixing the monetization, but also just like letting go of some of my art and not keeping it so personal to me, because I know that it would probably do much better in someone else's space rather than me casually seeing it 500 times a day.
Just pulling it out, looking at it.
Right. I think like exactly what you said, I'm like, that's something I actually need to work on. And that I'm aware that I need to work on is that I need to be better at like letting go of my art and letting other people experiencing it, because it is so personal to me.
Yeah. I mean, I guess like if someone wanted to buy something that I made, I would be thrilled for someone to give me money for it. But I don't think I'd want to be in a position where I was doing custom orders, or it is like an artistic expression that I have that I would rather not muddy up with the commerce of it. I don't think that I would want to be selling that, and I wouldn't want the responsibility of having to sell it.
And I think that's what part of the challenge was, is being an artist. And when I was at that point was like, And I think anybody has to go through it, whether you're a tattoo artist, a makeup artist, a painter, is realizing how do you monetize it and how do you structure that and become comfortable with doing those art and giving it, selling it. Because that's what I started to, I do abstract art and a lot of like really, really crazy splashing and things like that. And I'm like, how do I make someone comfortable with buying a piece from me, but knowing I'm just going to throw paint on a canvas? And so like, and then I felt uncomfortable. Like, are you comfortable giving me money to throw paint on a canvas and like do this for me? So like, it really is part of the challenge, I feel like, of being an artist, is like figuring out how to own the fact that you are creating something that other people will appreciate. I think that was one of the biggest challenges. So 100%.
Well, I mean, it relates to what we talked about in an early episode, the imposter syndrome, I think, a little bit, where you're showing up in a space that you're probably much better prepared for than you even realize. But because you like it, or because you are a professional, you have this feeling or sense of like, I'm not sure I'm supposed to be here. Everyone else seems to think it, but I'm not quite positive. And I think, you know, when you guys are speaking to this, I'm hearing it as someone who's more in the idea giving industry or writing industry, where I'm coming up with plans for someone's approach to marketing a product or marketing their brand or telling their story. And so it's interesting, because I've had so many times kind of feeling that exact same thing, where I'm like, not necessarily I can't do it, but how do I ask for the right amount of money to ensure and see through an idea that I can't possibly tell you is 100% going to do 100% of the things I said it should do.
But yeah, I mean, I would definitely say this year has been a lot of like teetering on imposter syndrome, both between the corporate side of things as well as the artistic side of things, and just trying to overcome that, because this year has just been so hard in so many ways and made me question a lot of things about myself. But again, having gone through such a low of where was I at with my artistic career and my big jump into the cannabis industry, to now having been back at a new dispensary. And since I've been there, been killing it and been in their top sales out of a lot of bud tenders.
So cool.
But it was exactly that. When I was going back into the industry, that's what I was most hesitant about, was because I was let go from this small mom and pop shop. And it made me question my like entire work ethic and my entire basically worth to the industry of like, how did I mess up here? Why did I mess up here? I felt like I was doing all the right things and taking all the right steps. And that was the hardest part about looking for a job and getting back into the cannabis industry, was that I felt like, because things didn't go well at the first dispensary, like I didn't deserve to be in the industry, or that if I got back in the industry, I would just be a make mistakes again.
Mm-hmm.
And so I definitely think that's something I've learned, is that you have to kind of push past that imposter syndrome. Because had I not, that was like, I was so close to not going back into the industry and taking just a phone-based stay-at-home customer service job.
Oh my gosh.
And I was very, very close to taking that because I just didn't think I was where I belonged. And I'm so glad I trusted my instinct and gave it another chance.
Oh my gosh. And that's so fascinating. And maybe I'm projecting, but what we came away with imposter syndrome, you know, kind of deciding is if you're feeling it, you're probably doing really well. It's like this weird conundrum where if you are having imposter syndrome, it's probably because you're in the right place or you're doing well enough to know you can't possibly know everything. Whereas if you don't have it, it's possible that that's actually when you're like just skating along and not really pushing yourself perhaps. And so I'm curious, because like you're feeling this imposter syndrome trying to jump back into the cannabis industry, and then it sounds like maybe you were taking opportunity after opportunity and eating up jobs for years in hospitality. Did you have the same feeling at all there? Was it kind of like, nope, I just skating through, I can do this? Like, you probably had some natural talent, but maybe you just weren't worried about messing up there.
I think for me, it was different because I knew I was going into a new industry, and it's a new industry that's like new to the world itself.
Right.
So I feel like I just went in with the most attempt at being humble and just being like, I'm not going to know what's going on here. So I'm not going to try to push any of what I am, even though mm-hmm. I come with all this experience.
Right.
So I feel like it didn't lead till that until I started to gain a grip of like, okay, actually now I do know what's going on in this industry a bit. And like, okay, now I feel like I'm able to mesh my previous experience with what's actually what I've learned so far. I think that was the difference as to why I didn't feel it so much going into the industry though, is because I knew going into it, like, I don't want to be the guy that's like, here's everything I learned in hotels, so let me tell you how to run the cannabis industry.
Right.
Because I just knew that would not be received well. So I think for me, that was the biggest difference as to why I didn't face it until down the road. But it's like, I moved up very quickly. Even at the dispensary I went, I was only a bud tender there for like 2 months before they moved me into being the trainer, where I ended up training and bud tending and literally trained that entire store once through, which was 40 bud tenders over the course of a year at a small shop, which was ridiculous.
Wow.
But then it's kind of crazy when you have this experience and you're like, hey, I just worked through COVID. I've just learned how to do delivery. I've learned how to do pretty much every job in a small dispensary, getting kicked out of the industry and then having to re-interview and then being like, well, how would you sell this product? And you're just like, oh my God, I just trained like 40 people on how to do this.
Right.
Am I capable of doing, like, and having to explain that you are capable of doing something you've already done? That's when I really started to feel it.
Nervous. Okay. Cool. And whereas in the hospitality ladder climbing, you were more so taking on new things and still feeling spongy enough that you never really confronted an imposter syndrome there.
Yeah, I think it's exactly that, is because that's the thing, is when you work in such big corporations, and I feel like you would definitely know this from like Disney, is that
they're just small. They're like a mom and pop. You know, just,
is
not a
that,
big place.
Is that when you work for somewhere on such a large scale, you don't get to dip your hands in as many pools and learn just small little basic skills that are so transferable because you have such a focus of like, this operation's huge. We need this one thing done and we need it done correctly. And you're the person doing that.
Totally.
Same thing working in hotels. When you work at a small boutique hotel, you're going to learn everything all at once at the front desk. You're going to learn to be the concierge, to help housekeeping, to be the bellman a little bit, to do valet a little bit. And you learn all of those elements when you're in a small hotel. Well, when you work at a huge luxury property, you only get to learn one focus at a time. So it'd be like, I'm working at front desk, so I'm going to learn all the elements of the front desk. Okay, now I'm working concierge. There's 40 other concierge. They're not going to ask a front desk agent like, hey, we need a concierge today. No, we have a full staff of concierge. So I think for me, it was like when you're working, and this is any, like I said, big corporation, you're going to go a little bit slower in your learning because you learn one piece, I feel like, or a couple pieces at a time versus the entire operation.
And I think in a larger corporation too, because things are so separated and there is a team of people who are doing marketing and a team of people who are doing advertising and a team of people who are doing management above management above management. A lot of times when you at a lower level have an idea, it's discouraged because it's messing with what other people have going on.
While at the same time, almost to what you said, Miles, and I feel like the three of us can at least agree on this, having had experience at a big corporate setting and maybe knowing the limitations or the channels of communication, how it works, when I've ended up back, I've never actually worked at a similar size company, shocker, but I have gone back into situations where I do have more of the traditional like HR and these rules and these systems. And I have a bit of a better appreciation for maybe why, but also be this ability, I think, to go kind of see both sides. Like I've done the mom and pop thing and now I've done, you know, the giant corporate thing. And so how can you sandwich the two together and come up with something even better, you know? Because not having an HR department is also real rough at the mom and pops.
True.
I'll say that.
100%. No, and I mean, that I feel like was the point and was actually the best takeaway of my experience this year was that basically I was so frustrated when I left my last dispensary and then had all that time, had a lot of self-reflection. But then as soon as I got this new opportunity and started to feel like I'm now in the right place, I'm like, I think the biggest takeaway was that I got that year of experience at a mom and pop shop and was able to get my hands on all of these areas and learn so many things about the cannabis industry that had I started straight into this mega one, which I was probably qualified for, probably good aligned for with my hotel experience, I've already been like, oh my God, I would have been a mess starting there. Just because there's so many now big departments and elements of where I'm currently working that I'm glad I was like able to kind of ease into it and learn all these baby steps that then when I came into my interview at this mega corporation, I was like, oh, I know that. And you just want me to sell weed? Perfect.
that's
yes. Awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good testament to bringing it back to kind of the multi-hyphenate conversation, like the steps that you take along the way or the steps that you take at the same time as what you're focusing on can all really be helpful and serve you in ways that you're not expecting to implement well while you're learning them.
I feel like we just take that experience with us because I know that I was definitely not perfect in my time at on the strip working in the hotel industry. And I definitely made a lot of mistakes and a lot of just like young mistakes, just as a person that is trying to move up the corporate ladder does. But I love it because I'm kind of reintroduced back into a corporate structure. And I feel like I have so much knowledge and experience of like what I should do and when I should feel comfortable raising my voice and when I should maybe take a step back and let things go with the flow. And I think that's one of the reasons I am doing well is because I'm able to recognize that experience is benefiting me and that I'm able to help the company when they want it and take a step back and let them do their thing when they want it.
Totally.
That was kind of my last question, and I guess you've answered it pretty well, was that I was just wondering, going from a very corporate hotel background to the mom and pop cannabis to now a very corporate cannabis situation, are there more parallels that you see between the two very corporate situations that you were in?
One really big thing for anybody, in whether you're working corporate or not corporate, is to find out what works for you. Because I think there are certain people that would really thrive in a mom and pop scenario. And I think that was one of the things I was excited about when I got there. Because I was like, oh, there's a lack of structure. And wow, everything is so laid back.
Yeah.
But then I think I realized over time, within about 6 months, that I was like, things are way too laid back. And like, I need some enforcement and I need other people to be enforced so that everybody's job is going smoothly. So I think it's important to find out where you are most comfortable working in, if just for people looking for jobs and experience. But 100%, I think that the corporate structure that was at the hotel, I now see the sides of it that I really liked, like health insurance, paid time off, HR.
The biggies.
And even just incentivize it, like just basic things like corporate structure incentives and things where you feel appreciated and taken care of as an employee, because those come with corporate structure versus like simple, oh, well, you showed up because this is our business and it's our small business, so thanks for being here.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing, is there's definitely huge parallels to the hotel to where I'm working now that I love and recognize.
I like that answer because it's advice too, which is something we try to ask a lot of people, but I feel like you just gave great advice.
So we will definitely link to your art in our show notes, but do you want to tell people where they can find your stuff?
Yeah, if you are interested in checking out my art, go to chacochip.com. That's chacochip.com. And then my Instagram is chacochip_art. And my personal Instagram is chacochacochip.
Chacochacochippin.
We will have links in the post and we will, or in our show notes. And we will also have some links, I think, in our social media this week.
Well, thank you. This was excellent.
Thank you guys for having me. This was so fun.
Yeah, we appreciate your time. And
I will say, I mean, I don't know if it's part of the podcast or not, but I saw something today that I liked. It was like, you can face things you fear. You can face challenges and run and turn away, or you can face them head on and step up and just try to be as courageous as possible. And I feel like I was kind of nervous to come on to the podcast, but I saw that today and I was like, I'm just going to step up to the challenge. And like, I'm just going to try to be as confident about doing this as possible. And I feel like it's kind of just a good message too. Like, this is the year to like face challenges, step up and not turn your back and run. Cause I still think there's like so much opportunity.
No, I love that. That's great. You'll have to send us wherever you found that. Send it. Well, thank you again and again and again.
Yay. I love you guys. You. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah. Thank you.
Have a great night.
Bye.
Bye.
That was awesome. I'm really glad that we got to talk to Miles. It was really informative. And also it was interesting for me as a non-cannabis user and someone who's not super familiar with that world. Like, I went to a dispensary with a friend once in Las Vegas and I found it to be like super overwhelming and just like a wild experience. And
I've never been in Vegas. Oh my God. Yeah,
it was insane. And it was I think it was the first time that I had gone to any dispensary. So it was like super over the top being at one in Vegas. And then I went to a few tiny ones in LA to pick things up for other people mostly. But yeah, it's interesting to see that there is a very corporate side of it. And it's not like, I don't know, I'm sure there's some stigma and this isn't something that we talked about with Miles, but like the fact that it is a new industry that's newly legalized, I'm sure there probably is some stigma of like it just being kind of this seedy drug dealery kind of thing. And it really is not that at all.
No. And I think even more and more as it goes, absolutely changing. Like, I think between, you know, CBD and serums and, you know, lotions you can use for pain and injury, you know, it far exceeds its kind of recreational reputation. But yeah, I don't know. I'm so grateful to Miles as well, because I feel like I gushed about the fact I've known him forever, which is 100% true. And honestly, he's as close as probably I've come to having like a little brother, just considering the closeness of his sister and our K-12 schooling experience. But that being said, I was really excited because I feel like I hadn't been so closely along for the professional journey. And I just, my heart is always, you know, cheering Miles on, but I feel like his honesty was so impressive because I think we've talked to a lot of people who've had hard experiences or made changes because of maybe outside forces coming into their life and saying like, this is not the job for you. But it felt like Miles's, his experience is so much more of this internal journey that he's on. And he's recognizing, you know, what makes him happy, what makes him tick, and not having that imposed upon him per se, but yet, you know, leaning into it. And it's still really scary when you decide, hey, I'm going to leave an industry I've worked hard in for many years and educated myself in and it sounded like, you know, for all intents and purposes, doing very well in, and jump into something I've had an inkling would be my thing, boy, but I'm not positive about where this experience is going to take me. And then even have a bad experience, or like maybe not a bad experience, but a hard experience, one that it sounds like he's learning from and looking back on fondly in some ways, but I don't know, like, I mean, it spoke to my story too. I guess it's kind of what I did.
It's super commendable. And also, like, being at the age that I am now, it's hard to think of, like, could I jump into a new thing entirely? Because, you know, I've done a lot already and I've done different things. Kind of the older I get, the more kind of hardened I feel against the idea of, like, let's totally redo it again. But I guess that's what the whole multi-hyphenate thing is about. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe. We really need those subscriptions and reviews on Apple Podcasts, please. If you would like to follow us on social media, we are at Blood Sweat Careers on Instagram, and you can always send your hate mail to bloodsweatcareerspod@gmail.com. We will see you next week.
See ya.
Bye.